Having the Secretary of Defense show up is important, and because both countries are facing the predatory China.
Seeking greater military cooperation in Southeast Asia. It's Tuesday, January 23rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, maritime disputes and cooperation in the South China Sea. Olympics to transform part of Korea DMZ. Afghanistan preserves heritage through art. Cleaning water, distracting car technology. It's all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis has embarked on his latest Asia trip with stops in Indonesia and Vietnam after unveiling on Friday the declassified version of the Trump administration's national security strategy, which deemed revisionist powers a greater threat than terrorism. But Mattis said no enemy in the field has done more to erode America's military readiness than recent defense spending cuts coupled with temporary spending measures known as continuing resolutions in 9 of the last 10 years. Carl Thayer, a Canberra-based consultant and professor emeritus at the University of New South Wales, tells VOA's Victor Beatty the Mattis trip is a follow-on to President Donald Trump's visit to the region last November.
And I think the key here is we have a national security strategy, national defense strategy, with a major stress on new partners. And Vietnam and Indonesia were singled out in the national security strategy as a group of four partners, Singapore, Malaysia, with the other two in the region. So he's following up on that.
Here's a quote. "The point I want to make is we respect Asia's sovereign nations with a sovereign voice and sovereign decisions. And we don't think anyone else should have a veto authority over their economic, their diplomatic, or their security decisions."
The National Defense Strategy, which he released, it talks about consulting and being transparent with partners and working in cooperation, stressing multilateralism, which is a relief for those of us who've waited for the Trump administration to finally table its strategy, and then these other strategies, like the National Defense Strategy, follow. And Mattis is the man to do that. He's Asia familiar. There's a whole stress on supporting State Department and diplomacy and the national defense strategy. With Indonesia and Vietnam, the hackneyed expression, they highly respect, but they will, the attention that he's given him. Having the Secretary of Defense show up is important, and because both countries are facing the predatory China that the defense strategy talks about, Indonesia increasingly so, with fishermen and Chinese Coast Guard, Vietnam with the normal disputes that it has.
The Japanese Kyoto News Agency is quoting a U.S. Defense Department spokesperson as saying that Mattis will travel to China later this year on his first official visit to that country since assuming his post. How important will that trip be?
Well, it will be because, one, China's offside a bit with being called out in the national security and defense strategy. But the national defense strategy actually says that the U.S. will offer competitors and adversaries an outstretched hand open to opportunities for cooperation, but based on a position of U.S. strength. Cooperating with China on North Korea is absolutely vital, and ballistic missile defense, which angers China, will all be in the mix. But it's a positive development. I mean, the more the U.S. is engaged, and I'm sitting in Canberra, the more Australia is reassured. So we're seeing good momentum now following President Trump's visit. And Secretary Mattis is the heavyweight, I would say. He's Asia savvy. He's globally savvy. He knows all elements of national power, and they're listed in the national defense strategy. And going to China is important.
As for America's budget battles, Carl Thayer says his opinion about the polarized debate over the budget means the United States is not a good example of soft power. He said it is vital the United States get back to a regular budgetary cycle because of the importance of American leadership in the world. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. Mattis in Southeast Asia amid fresh U.S. focus on China. Invitation to let China explore its sea risks political backlash in Philippines. Philippines raises volcano threat level. Tokyo holds evacuation drill, simulates North Korea missile attack. A reportedly executed North Korean pop diva takes Olympic spotlight. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and also on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Authorities in the Philippines are warning residents of the imminent and potentially dangerous eruption of the country's most active volcano. State volcanologists raised the threat level for Mount Mayon to 4 on a scale of 5, meaning the eruption could happen within hours or days. Tens of thousands of villagers have fled their homes since the volcano has awakened. Meanwhile, a decision by Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte to let China do research on the Philippines Pacific Ocean continental shelf could erupt with a new backlash at home among Filipinos who already distrust the more powerful Beijing. Duterte is allowing a Chinese vessel to examine the Benam Rise, a 13-million-hectare plateau rich in minerals and undersea natural gas, this month and next for scientific research, according to officials from both countries. Duterte also let Chinese research vessels work above Benam Rise in late 2016, and when people found out months later, he took heat from opponents in the legislature and influential Philippine news media. As the Philippines continues overtures toward Beijing, Manila on Sunday said it will not get embroiled in a fresh spat between the United States and China involving Beijing's protest of an American warship passing near a Chinese-controlled shoal also claimed by the Philippines. President Duterte has rejected planned joint patrols by the United States and Philippine navies in disputed South China Sea waters, along with joint combat exercises that could offend China. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Michael Fuchs, senior fellow with the Washington-based Center for American Progress. From 2013 to 2016, he served as Deputy Assistant Secretary of State of the U.S. government for East Asian and Pacific Affairs.
Well, it's always unclear exactly what is going on inside the mind of Rodrigo Duterte, but I think it is clear that since taking office, he has attempted to decrease tensions over the South China Sea with China. It seems first and foremost to attract more Chinese economic investment and improve trade relations with China. That said, I think that President Duterte's efforts to ease tensions with China have brushed up against the efforts of others in his government and in the Philippines, including his defense ministry, which clearly sees a threat from China in the South China Sea and is continuing to support U.S. and regional efforts to push back against China in the South China Sea.
China's obviously making similar moves with other Asian countries. In fact, they're making moves all over the world now. They're leasing a Sri Lankan seaport. They're joining a Vietnamese oil producer to look for energy reserves in the Gulf of Tonkin. Is the motivation for cooperation simply financial, as you just mentioned, or are there other reasons for this?
Well, I think that there is a multitude of potential reasons that countries like the Philippines are interested in increased cooperation with China. I think first and foremost, it is because of the economic potential. China's economy obviously is growing rapidly and will likely continue to grow. And so these countries, including the Philippines, see a vital stake in making sure that they have access to that beneficial trade relationship. But at the same time, I think that another major factor for the Philippines and other countries of the region is fear. They are afraid of growing Chinese power and assertiveness in Asia, and they are uncertain about what the future holds for them, and frankly, whether or not the United States and other regional partners and allies banding together will be able to push back sufficiently against China. And so I think it's the combination of these two, both the economic potential as well as fear, that drives countries like the Philippines to try to lower tensions over issues like the South China Sea with China.
Do you see that as having a direct correlation between Secretary of Defense Mattis's words the other day about a different move and a different posture toward China? As a matter of fact, last week, the head of the U.S. military's Pacific Command called China a disruptive power in the Indo-Pacific region. I'm sure you remember Admiral Harry Harris said China's actions had caused disquiet in countries stretching from the Philippines to Malaysia and Vietnam, and he said it was time countries took firmer measures to ensure maritime stability. Are we entering into a more dangerous area here?
Well, I think we are, and I think that there is a growing consensus in the United States and in many other countries that China's rise is increasingly destabilizing the Asia-Pacific and potentially beyond. I think that one of the main major competitor and disruptor in the Asia-Pacific, as is outlined by the national security strategy of the Trump administration and many senior officials, or whether or not China is a country that needs to be placated, as you frankly see President Trump doing from time to time in his praise of Xi Jinping, the president of China. And so, again, I think that those mixed messages coming out of the U.S. administration make it much more difficult to organize a concerted strategy against China.
Can you detect an overall or maybe even a specific and a little more finely honed strategy of China under Xi Jinping?
Well, I think that Xi Jinping's strategy for China is to accelerate the path that China had been on for a number of years and, frankly, decades. Now that China's economic might continues to grow, Xi Jinping is beginning to clearly shed the hide-and-bide strategy espoused by Deng Xiaoping and wants China to play a more robust out-front and assertive role, especially in the Asia-Pacific, where it believes that where Xi Jinping believes that China needs to assert its rights in areas of disputed sovereignty, such as the East China Sea and the South China Sea, but frankly, beyond elsewhere in the world. And so I think that we see Xi Jinping trying to take China to a place where he thinks China's rightful role in the world, on the world stage, is, and that is as a central, if not one of the central players in the world.
Michael Fuchs, senior fellow with the Washington-based Center for American Progress, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Happening now in Asia, the gradual repatriation of Rohingya Muslim refugees to Myanmar from Bangladesh, previously set to begin Tuesday, has been delayed. It is not immediately clear when the process will begin. There is concern refugees will be forced to return to a place they had fled just a few months ago. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us for this Tuesday edition of VOA Asia. North Korea's participation in the upcoming Pyeongchang Winter Olympics to be held in South Korea has diffused regional tensions for now and given new hope for dialogue and cooperation. To that end, Olympic hosts are working to transform the heavily militarized border area just north of Pyeongchang into a tourist attraction, emphasizing the theme of inter-Korean peace. VOA's Brian Patton has more following his visit to the area.
Inside the demilitarized zone checkpoint on the east coast of South Korea is the Gosong Unification Observatory, where visitors can look across to the mountains of North Korea. It is here that the Gangwon Province Olympic hosts have launched an arts festival focusing on the tragic division of this land and hopes for its eventual unification. In addition to musical performances emphasizing the shared culture of the two Koreas, novelist Lee Wei-so read a poetic prayer for peace.
The 2018 Pyeongchang Olympics may give us a brief moment of unification as people of the South and North gather together and share their brotherly love.
This theme of Korean reconciliation will be the focus of many of the more than 40 South Korean cultural events to be staged during the Olympics. South Korean officials hope North Korea's decision to send an Olympic delegation to Pyeongchang, including 140 artists and musicians to perform, will ease international concerns that a military conflict might erupt during the Games.
People who are coming from abroad worry that this region may be very dangerous, but it will be our pleasure to work with them to ease their concerns.
The DMZ itself, officials hope, will become an Olympic destination where visitors can see historical sites like the summer home of North Korean founding leader Kim Il-sung that became part of the South at the end of the Korean War in 1953. There is also a DMZ museum recounting decades of the tense military standoff between North and South, along with competing propaganda efforts that often use beauty and sex appeal to capture hearts and minds. Museum curator No Young-soo hopes that Korea's Olympic peace offensive will increase visitor interest in the divided history of the country.
It has just been announced and is under progress, so I cannot quite feel it here yet, but I can suspect that it will influence South Koreans to pay attention to it.
And Olympic officials in South Korea are trying to underscore the potential for peace by sending messages of friendship north of the border. Brian Patton, VOA News, Pyeongchang.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A court in Vietnam has sentenced one former Petro-Vietnam official to life in prison, another to 13 years on charges centered around alleged fraud and embezzlement involving Ocean Bank, a major private bank in which the oil and gas group bought a stake of and later wrote off when the bank nearly collapsed. Visit VOA 60 for top news and VOA Asia Facebook each day. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Afghanistan's arts and architecture were once the pride of Asia. However, more than four decades of war have left many of the country's traditional crafts on the verge of extinction. Now a Britain-based organization, Turquoise Mountain, is working to preserve Afghan heritage in the capital's still-surviving commercial district, Muradkhani. VOA DOS service correspondent Munaza Shahid reports from a recent trip to Kabul.
The sights, sounds, and smells of Kabul's Muradkhani district are unmistakable. A blacksmith forges an axe, and the aroma of lamp cooking in traditional pots wafts through the bazaar as a potter spins his wheel to craft clay pots.
All material natural from Istalif, from in Lugar. All four are very old. About 1,000 years ago.
Like almost everything else in the Afghan capital, the country's long wars have taken their toll on Muradkhani too. Badly damaged, poor, and nearly buried under rubble, Muradkhani is still surviving as a historic commercial and residential area in old Kabul. But the area is on the World Monuments Fund's watch list of the world's most endangered sites. Since 2006, British-based aid group Turquoise Mountain has led efforts to preserve and rebuild Muradkhani and save from extinction the crafts that once thrived here.
So one of the goals of Turquoise Mountain in Afghanistan is to revive traditional Afghan crafts. So we work with artisan businesses all across Afghanistan. We provide them with technical training, business mentoring. We help them improve their marketing skills, their product design. And then we try and link them to international designers and global brands to facilitate their sales also outside of Afghanistan.
Since 2006, Turquoise Mountain has trained over 450 artisans in traditional arts and restored or rebuilt 112 historic or community buildings in the old city of Kabul. Supporters of the project say restoring and preserving traditional Afghan crafts is as important as efforts to bring peace to the war-ravaged country. Munaza Shahid, VOA News, Kabul.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Hundreds of people in Japan's capital, Tokyo, participated in an evacuation drill meant to simulate the scenario of an incoming North Korean ballistic missile. The government has conducted 26 such drills in Japan, but this was the first to take place at subway stations and an amusement park. Keep VOA Asia Facebook nearby on your phone and computer for the latest. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, in most of the developed world, water flows a long and winding path from the sink to the ecosystem, but not before making an all-important stop at a wastewater treatment plant. It's more than just cleaning out dirt and debris that we can see. It's about removing invisible contaminants that could poison nearby waters. Arash Arabasadi didn't need to go too far downstream to find details.
This is the largest advanced wastewater treatment plant in the world.
We treat flow that comes in from over 2 million people.
DC Water uses a multi-step process for removing biological nutrients at this huge, state-of-the-art facility in Southwest Washington. The process starts by taking out the garbage.
And it's really trash. It's the one thing at the plant here that we can't make use of.
That debris goes to the landfill while enough water to fill an entire football stadium flows daily through the plant. Now, countless little bugs do the heavy lifting.
These microbial masses you can see swirling in the water are converting the organic nitrogen to nitrogen gas to ensure that it doesn't end up in the Chesapeake Bay.
Still hungry, these brown clusters of microbes get another free meal.
This is the secondary process. It's called activated sludge. And the bubbles you see here are air that comes up from the bottom of these 30-foot deep tanks.
The air moves the microbes, which gives them more room to feast.
That microbial mass is now filled with carbon, which we end up sending to the digesters and converting to energy.
Launching a high-pressure, high-heat digestive process called thermohydrolysis.
The digesters here are like the stomach for the city. They are populated with a dense population of archaea. We have archaea in our guts to help us digest food, produce a little gas once in a while.
By trapping and using that gas as energy, DC Water generates one-third of the 25 megawatts that power the plant. They even reuse the solid waste from the sewers as fertilizer.
What once was a waste product is now a valuable resource for us to use in the community, and I use it on my own lawn for the flower beds. We grow tomatoes and cucumbers. I eat the vegetables myself. I feed them to my family. I love my family. I am convinced that this is perfectly safe.
And so too is the plant in a world facing increasingly harsh weather. Piot says that even when faced with the increased water flows from recent major storms, wastewater treatment plants like this one can still do their job, which at its core is protecting the local ecosystem. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Automakers are trumpeting new technology, including blind spot warnings, backup cameras, and rear cross traffic alerts as a way to make driving safer. But road safety advocates say the explosion of technology in cars may actually do just the opposite, as VOA's Faith Lapidus has discovered.
Change the radio station, check your email, find the nearest gas station. Most new cars now come with infotainment options that allow people to connect to social media, maps, and text. But the American Automobile Association says this leaves many drivers distracted.
So these technologies have become more complex in that they allow drivers to do things that they couldn't do previously.
The handful of knobs on an old-fashioned dashboard have been replaced with as many as 50 multifunction buttons on the steering wheel and dash. In a AAA test of all 2017 model year cars and light trucks, drivers took their eyes off the road and hands off the wheel while using infotainment systems. Drivers who remove their eyes from the road for just 2 seconds double their risk for a crash. While automakers keep adding and enhancing features like touch screens, voice commands, and heads-up displays, they don't need to be part of the driving experience.
Just because technology allows you to do XYZ while also driving the car doesn't mean that you should.
Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road is the best way to stay safe on the highway. I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. We stream each and every day on VOA Asia Facebook and also our website at voanews.com. And if you happen to be in Thailand, you can catch us on the radio. PSU Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University. Thanks to everyone there who was listening today. Our thanks, as always, go out to Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jimmy Cook, Managing Editor Diane Gao, our VOA Asia team, including Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and David Bird. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a nice day.